Namaste and in La Ketchin. Welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and this week's guest is a very phenomenal woman in Sajal Thakkar. And she has got some amazing things that she's doing, as well as a very interesting take on diversity and inclusion, too. So she is a passionate attorney and educator. She's a 2-times TEDx speaker. She talks about culture, civility, training, leadership, and diversity and inclusion. She's a top conflict resolution voice on LinkedIn. That's a cool badge to have. She's a chief civility officer for her company, Train Extra. She's the chief culture officer for Nobody Studios. We'll talk about that as well. And she's an empathy architect for Empathy U. She's a contributing author for Biz Catalyst, which is where we found each other initially. And she has a vision of a more accepting and civil world. So, John, glad to have you here.
Thank you, Zen. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, it's going to dive in very deep, very quick. So we're going to go inside. We're not going to step back in the Wayback Machine with Sherman and Peabody, right? We're going to go inside and we're going to discuss, you know, I'm going to question, how did you first get in touch with the inner voice that I know you have based on what you do? It's got to have been there for quite some time in order to have the expertise that you do and the willingness to put yourself in places to garner that expertise. So how did that begin?
Well, you know, I think that like the inner voice has always been there. You know, I've always been more spiritually minded for as long as I can remember. So I've always paid attention to my inner voice, my intuition. But I would say around 7th or 8th grade is when it started getting really loud and annoying and angry. And, you know, I was dealing with some bullying at school with some kids, and I started noticing that something inside of me was changing and that I was starting to fight back rather than just kind of ignore the comments or just, you know, deal with it by just talking to my dad at home or just kind of, you know, walk away from situations. I was fighting back now. And so I was using my words more. I was getting more physical and defending myself. And that's when I really started listening to it more. And I realized that I had a decision to make. You know, if I kept going down the path of listening to that inner voice in those moments, that I was going to, you know, who knows where I was going to end up. It was a dark path. So I spent a lot of time just going inwards and reflecting on really what's important to me. What do I want to do? And it's right on that time that I made the decision that I knew that I wanted to go to law school. So that was 7th or 8th grade. So I always knew I was going to go to law school, and that's what got me on my journey to being an employment lawyer.
Oh, that's amazing. My project that I was really keen on during that time was a report on the Gemini and Apollo projects. Never became an astronaut, but boy, have I experienced some space. So in this conflicted, exasperated, and inquiring state of being that you were experiencing, how did you find that it began to evolve into something that was more, let's say, clear, manageable, followable, that were where you were able to do things that you may not have thought you would be able to with that surety that comes along with it?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll give a little bit of background, right? So I grew up as a daughter of immigrants, Indian immigrants. My parents moved here in 74 from India, and they had to start working right away, right? Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, I grew up in a predominantly Italian neighborhood, so I dealt with that bullying, discrimination. So all of these things kind of
led a lot of loud people.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like I said, I wanted to be a lawyer. And so when I went through law school, right? And when I came out, I started practicing employment law. And that's really where I learned a lot of just more about another side of, I use this word, bias, right? Or our how we treat each other, you know, our unconscious bias. And so when I was working as an employment law attorney, I realized that I wanted to be more a part of the solution rather than coming in after the fact and reacting to problems that were already happening. So that's where this shift started to happen with my focus of how do I want to make an impact, right? And so I knew that's where I decided I wanted to change the culture in workplaces. I wanted to focus more on educating management and people on how to deal with situations where what I dealt with as a child, right? How do you speak up? What do you do as a bystander? So I kind of, that's where my childhood started merging with my legal expertise. And well, that's where
that you were able to make that transition with skills or a skill set that you learned through experience. So it wasn't a theory at that point. Mm-hmm. You had ways of moving through that. And of course, I'm sure you learned other techniques and things along the way too. How did you use that in order to shift that in more preemptive activity rather than, you know, crisis management style?
Yeah. So that's when I took the leap of faith in 2017. So actually, let me back up. So when I had my son, I decided I was going to leave the law practice altogether because I wanted to be at home and raise my son. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's where I started to get more into the education piece. I started teaching at some universities. I started doing more training kind of as a side hustle. Right. And then finally in 2017, I said, I'm going to go for it. I want to do this full time. I started my company Train Extra, and my focus really was I want to work with organizations to help create more positive, safe, and respectful workplaces. So the path that I chose was offering customized training programs and coaches to leaders so that they can empower their teams in being part of the solution.
In that process and providing solutions, what were some of the issues that were ever present that seemed to plague the industry in general, I think is probably, and did you find that? Were these kinds of behaviors, patterns, operational faux pas, if you will, ubiquitous, or was it selective to specific industries?
No, it was all industries. It was all organizations of all sizes. So as you know, Zen, that I call myself the chief civility officer. Mm-hmm. Right. And that the reason why I did that was because throughout my career, I've noticed, and I call it, this is my own term that I've given to this, but I've seen this movement, right, where I call it the civility revolution. Right. And basically what I mean by that is there's been this growing awareness that we have workplace incivility. Right. And a genuine and that we want positive change. And we want, there's a demand for more inclusive and equitable work environments. So the civility revolution is something that I've witnessed throughout my career. And that's what really led to me starting my own company, right? And I would say that there's three things that kind of I've seen, the observations that led me to starting my own company. One was that I noticed that there is a shift in values. And we're seeing this even more now. But I'm just talking about in 2017 when I started doing it. And now these are all amplified, right? So I started seeing a shift in values that leaders all over the globe, right? People that were starting these companies and employees, the teams that were working for these organizations were valuing civility as a fundamental principle. We want to be treated with dignity and respect. And this was a major shift we started to see, really started to happen after the Me Too movement.
What a novel idea, huh?
Yeah, I know, right? Go figure. It's not that complicated, really. And then the second thing I noticed was that the civility revolution that I call it goes right in hand with our diversity and inclusion broader movement, right? So we started seeing organizations being more proactive and doing the work to dismantle biases, to foster inclusivity, and to really create spaces where people feel like they belong. Again, a no-brainer. We want that, right? But we started seeing more of that happening. And then the last thing, which is now really just at the forefront of everything that I'm doing, is people are no longer going to tolerate these behaviors. That we don't want bullying. We don't want incivility. We want it, you know, again, they're demanding accountability. And mm-hmm. so all of these sort of, I call it these like shifts that I was seeing led to me starting my company. And now it's after the pandemic, after the Black Lives Matter movement, after the politics, after the multi-generational workforces, after all of the things we've just seen recently. All the
different cycles and reiterations.
It's right? Like, let's do this. This is the time. We got to do it. So I'm really excited about the work that I'm doing and where we're headed, right? So.
Oh, absolutely. And it is now exciting. It's trendy. And it seems to be a bit more than trendy. But speaking of trends and cycles, and do you see, you mentioned several cycles and iterations of activities in organizational development in the business workplace. Do you see those being a continuing evolution into a new paradigm kind of powered by this new realization, especially after COVID? Hey, I don't have to work here. Right. I can work from home, or I can find some, you know, someplace to fit in where I feel like I belong better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you see that those cycles evolving into a bigger picture? Yeah. You know, we've got the ISO 26000 social responsibility standards that were released in 2010, ratified by 92 countries. Where are they? Right? Are these kinds of things, and those, as compared to the ISO 9000 quality standards, which are certifiable because of performance, the ISO 26000 are voluntary. So it gives the rank and file the opportunity to request the higher ups to engage in something that's a bit more responsible. Do you see those types of articles and materials being more useful and used?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, right? I can only speak from my experience. And I for where what I've seen, and specifically with the work that I've done working with organizations, right? So that's the universe that I feel comfortable speaking about, right? Sure. I'm seeing a huge shift. And it's almost to the point where if people don't commit to doing these things, right? Because now we've got AI, we've got technology, we've got all these things that we haven't had at our fingertips, right? Is that if organizations don't embrace things like civility, don't embrace things like diversity and inclusion, and don't really do these things proactively rather than waiting for you know, the lawsuit to come, for example,
right?
They're going to be left behind.
A disaster to descend.
They're going to be left behind, and especially right now, right, where you think about, like, I've had the privilege of working with a lot of organizations, right, and I've seen the positive changes that can come out from doing this work proactively. You know, Nobody Studios is a perfect example. I'm working with them as their chief culture officer. I've been working with this organization for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. Right. And they placed culture as a foundation for that organization. So when the CEO called me up, you know, about 2.5-3 years ago, and he's like, I'm starting a company from scratch and culture is important, and I would like for you to consider joining us and helping us do this proactively, I'm seeing more and more founders doing that. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, in 2017, when I started my company, and I would be knocking on these companies' doors saying, let me come in there, let me help you. And they were like, we don't have, I got a hundred different responses. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough people, blah, 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 blah. And I would say, okay, here's my legal business card, my attorney business card, hold on to this. And then call me when you get that lawsuit, right? So that's what I can tell you.
You can talk to me afterwards.
Exactly. So no, but you know, the benefit, I'll talk to you about what the benefits of doing this proactively are, right? You don't want, we know that our people are the most important asset. Mm-hmm. And so we have to create that environment of psychological safety, right? And so there are things that you have to do. You have, there's policies, that's one thing. There's doing what the law requires you to do and offer that once a year mandatory anti-harassment training. That's one thing. But it, those things haven't worked. So we need to do it differently, right? We, and we need to
have really learned how to be good humans. I mean, that's where
people need to know. Look around, right? Look around. Look at what's going on in this world. We can't assume people know how to behave.
Right.
We literally have to teach them, and we have to put those guardrails up. And because every organization is different from each other, what those guardrails look like are going to be different, right? Sure. Short of complying with the law.
Right. So let's take it back inside for a minute. Over to you, right? In this process, it would seem, based on what we have already reflected, in that, yeah, this makes sense, okay? So do you find that when these things are brought into conversations, because that's the first step, right? You got to bring it out, talk about it, so that it's available for discussion.
Sure.
Then when you find those points of the salient points of order within it, that's kind of a natural order in the progression. Do you find that there is an acknowledgement just in how it feels different, right? How it may feel more congruent, more coherent in a collective energy, if you will?
Yeah, I do. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we've got like multi-generations now that, that are working together, right? So now we're seeing workplaces with five different generations together. You see a different sort of dynamic there than we've ever seen before. The other thing that's
really... You've got your vernacular to begin with, each generation, right? And then how do you interpret each one of those listening with a similar ear?
That's right. And how do you teach those people how to... If we just focus on that, right? Mm-hmm. If we're talking about in an organization, you have to do everything differently. Because, you know, you got to teach people how to communicate with each other, how to resolve conflict. You got to teach people that not only are there multi-generations, but then you got globally we're working. Because now a lot of people are working remotely, virtually. You've got teams working with different time zones, different cultures.
Right.
So you have to deal with issues that maybe before you were like, oh, I don't want to put in the resources to address these issues. It's not that big of a deal, right? We only have to deal with, you know, people that are different than us every once in a while. But now you're dealing with people that are different with you, different than you, in so many different layers that you have to address these issues. You have to, otherwise you're not going to make it.
Well, do you find, I'm going to broach the subject of love, right? That's come up in a lot of conversations about how do we bring, first of all, how do we understand love and that natural desire to love and be loved?
Yeah.
And then how do we bring that into a workplace to imbue it with more sensitivity, right? Because that's really where it comes from, is that place of love. Authentically.
Yes.
In the inauthentic place, you can you can feel what that is too, because I suppose it borders on prescriptive.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
So how
do you see that being introduced? Do you see it being introduced, and what are the ways that you see it happening, and also what ways do you see it working?
Yeah, great question, Zen. I do see it happening, and I think it starts with the core values. You know, it's what are the, if we're starting an organization, if we're going to start a company right now, it starts with our core values. And if love is one of the core values, that has to be a part of it. You know, like, that's why another title, like, I keep giving myself all these titles, right? But empathy architect, right? That's another one. Is empathy is something that I encourage all organizations to embed into their core values. And not everybody knows how to be empathetic. Not everybody knows when you say love can mean different things to different people. So you have to get everybody on the same page to get that shared understanding. And so that everybody who joins that organization understands this is how we do things around here. We infuse it with love. We infuse it with empathy, and it's not for everybody, and that's okay. Then you choose a different journey. right? But that has to get really clear. And again, going back to Nobody Studios, we've done the work, you know, we've joined, we've had, we've hired out, we've brought in, not hired, we had a consultant.
So we brought up Nobody Studios, if I may interrupt you for a moment, so we can get some clarity on what Nobody Studios is. We talk about it, we're assuming that our audience knows. So what is Nobody Studios?
Thank you. Good question. So Nobody Studios is a venture studio. We were built, founded by our, we call him Chief Nobody, our CEO, Mark McNally. And really our goal is, it's a venture studio. So it's not a venture capital. Our studio is about building companies. And so our goal is we want to build 100 companies in the next 5 years. So we are, we're have founders that are coming into the studio with brilliant ideas. And we then support them with the tools, the resources, and we have certain types of areas that we're, you know, focused on, like health and wellness is a big area that we're into, that we're focusing in on. We have a 7 or 8 different areas that we focus on, but we build companies. And so I am right now, I'm their chief culture officer, and I guide them on all of their, provide, you know, strategies and guidance on their culture initiatives.
It sounds very much B Corp-ish, right? Where there's a vision and mission tied to community service.
Yeah. Yeah. It's similar to that. I would say it's comparable.
Not saying, but it's interesting how there are multiple varieties of this same kind of thoughtmospheric action, if you will, that's happening globally in some kind of what seems to be an uprising.
I like that word. I haven't heard that word before.
Can't claim it. Uprising? It came from a dear friend of mine, Steve Behrman, who masquerades as Swami Beyondananda. He's a new age comedian. I'll get it out. And for me to say, right? He actually co-wrote a book with Dr. Bruce Lipton called Spontaneous Evolution. Wonderful piece, and interjected with Steve's comedy. But he's the one that came up with that. We need an uprising, first of all, in America, and how we have lost our capacity for leadership in the world, in my opinion. We're not looked upon all that great, and everybody is concerned about our future instead of being able to determine what it will be and bond together in that way, which caused, you know, that's an uprising and even maybe an uprising of a groundswell of people who actually want to step up and do something about it.
Yes.
That's what it's going to take.
Yeah.
And we, how do you see that kind of activity kind of filtering into the work that you're doing and how it might spill out into the community because of the resetting of the value systems?
I thought about this question a lot, you know, because in just in trying to, my work is all passion and purpose driven, as you know. But I believe that the work that I'm doing, right, has a ripple effect on people like you're describing. And so when the, if I do my job right, people who are different than each other can work together effectively, right? They, that is going to ultimately lead to a reduction in this whole otherness, right? That feeds into the racism, the discrimination, all this stuff. So when we educate
coherence instead of contravation.
Exactly. And so that ripple effect not only impacts these companies that I'm working with, right? It's going to create... it's going to create more inclusive, safe workplaces, but that's ultimately going to be going out to the wider impact of the society, which is where we need more people like to do this work, right? So I just think what I'm doing is helping people. I'm empowering other people to continue to do this because we need everybody to get on this right now. I think this is a really important point. And you and I know a lot of the same people. Right. And we're all doing that in our own way. You know, I mean, I think I would guess that one of the reasons why you're doing this show, right, is to help people share their stories and benefit our society.
I feel a little exposed now.
No, what is your
right?
What is your
purpose of it is to talk about these inner experiences, these a return, on my perspective, to the inner value systems that we That's have right. naturally, and then putting them in places where they aren't yet, which increases that ability for a natural evolutionary process toward harmony among people and planet to occur. Now, how long that takes depends on how effective we are.
That's right. That's right. We are. I love that. How effective we are, because it is a we.
Right.
Every single person is part of the we, right? And so the quicker that we can all start moving in the same direction,
right,
the quicker we'll get there. And that's a
simple. Use the pronouns, I, we.
I know.
Right? There's no ego without we go.
That's right.
In order to play that way, you have to be able to alter your awareness to a place of curiosity rather than projection. Now, how did you, when you were going through these things and trying to figure out what were the inner derivations, if you will, of what you were attempting to implement and the concerns that you had with that being the derivations? Does that make sense?
I mean, anytime that you're going to be following your passion, right, which is, again, why I do everything that I do, you're taking risks, right? And taking those risks are scary.
Well, yeah, you're confronted with fear in every moment, nearly.
Well, yeah, and you fear,
potentially.
You fear failure, right? There were so many moments of rejection, of disappointment, right? I was stepping into something I've never done before, the unknown, the unfamiliar, and I had to be vulnerable to do what I do.
Right.
Well, so I had to go back inside of me before I can do the we part. And I had to figure out, like,
well, the self-love.
What is it? Yeah. What is the lane? What is the reason why I'm going to do this? And then it doesn't matter. I just continue to do that because that's what I'm here to do, you know? Mm-hmm. But what I've learned in going inside of me and figuring out really what makes me do this work and my why is that I've come to accept that fear, that's not my enemy. You know, I know that it's a natural response. I'm going to have a lot of it. You know, with the work that I'm doing for my own business with Nobody Studios, there's a lot of unfamiliarity in what I'm going out there wanting to do. And I'm okay with that.
Haven't been done before.
I know.
It's kind of the nature of being agile, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But we both know that when we step out of that comfort zone, that's where that magic is going to happen. You know, that's where we become the best version of ourselves. Right. And both of my TEDx talks are examples of me stepping out of my fear, you know, and saying, this is it. This is it. This is what I want to share. This is the impact that I want to have, and share your story, you know, and I did it.
Absolutely.
And it was wonderful to be able to have that opportunity.
Oh, and a phenomenal one at that, in being able, first of all, to overcome that top of the heap fear of public speaking,
oh, yeah,
according to all the charts, right? And even above death and dying, death and dying, yeah, same thing, a little redundant, death and divorce, right? Fear of public speaking is kind of the thing. Well, you're exposed completely.
Yeah.
At that point, you got to be vulnerable, or you make yourself vulnerable. The trick is to learn to play in that vulnerability. Right. That's again, that's that willingness to enter an unknown space with a bit of trust. Mm-hmm. Right. And sometimes, and oftentimes, those that fear shall fail. Because you've got to overcome that. That fear is a door. How do you recognize your fears and open the door when they begin to occur? What are the early warning signs?
Yeah. No, I literally just posted about this. Like, I think about a week ago or a week and a half ago.
Interesting synchronicity, eh?
That's what I'm saying. This happened when we spoke the first time too.
Yeah.
So, but the post was about, you know, one of my reflections that it starts with the understanding that fear is not something that we need to conquer or we need to be afraid of, but let's embrace that fear, you know, let's embrace it. And that when that mindset shift happens, right? And you embrace fear rather than running away from it or being scared of it. That's where you get to that curiosity,
sure.
Right? And that's where you start to really see risks as, you know, it's not an obstacle anymore, but it's more of an opportunity for growth and development. And actually, just this morning, I did a live stream with Mark McNally, our CEO, and we were even talking about that on that live stream. So this is happening. It's everywhere around us right now. People are talking about these really important things that you and I are talking about right now. It's on people's minds, right? So
and exciting that it's happening, and mm-hmm. you know, these kinds of things I've been talking about for decades since I had my awakening as yes. a teenager, looking for, you know, listening ears, trying to figure out how to articulate what I perceive and know based on my experience with, to an audience that is completely unfamiliar with the concepts, let alone the realities,
mm-hmm.
right? And now, since 2015, 2016, yes. 2017, that area began to burgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming out of COVID, it was like the silver lining of, you know, this leap in consciousness, or the upwising, or the beginning of it, even the beginning possible of this new world order of harmony among people and planet.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, right? However, it got people who were obsessing on self-hygiene and sequestrated to look inside.
Yes.
Right? Because you have all this outer behavior modification going on.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to do?
Yeah, it's true. And I agree, the upwising in me happened too right then. And the reason for that is because I had one thing because of the pandemic that I got that I had never had in my life before.
Hmm.
Time to go inwards. And you know, you could say, yes, you could make time for it. And now I do say that you can make time for it at any time, and you should. I get that, but I didn't have that
before. Most of us don't make time for things until we're forced to, for
exactly.
some reason. We just have that natural reticence to not do stuff that's
right.
healthy for us. Right.
Yeah. And you're just, I mean, go, go, go. You know,
right.
That was my life. I was like just a hustler. You know, and it was it was to survive, you know, sometimes,
right.
Sometimes it was to survive, right? Like when the pandemic happened, I'm a single mom and my work was all traveling and doing workshops in person. And all of a sudden I couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So when you talk about being forced to go inward, yes, I was forced to go inward because I had nothing else to do.
I had a client in the same situation. She was live artists, so
mm-hmm.
she would open country and western shows with live painting to
mm-hmm.
music, and she would paint, you know, popular people and across the gamut. When COVID happened, disappeared, so she had to totally reinvent herself, and we were able to reposition her into actually fulfilling another dream of hers, and that was to have her own TV show.
Oh, cool.
And one of the country and western channels picked it up. So that was really cool to say, and proof of the theory.
Yes.
Not really theory. Right? It's just, there's certain things that you set up and you monitor and you adjust as you go along, as you figure out how you're thinking about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the only way to figure out how you're thinking about things is to hear yourself speak about them. Usually, right? Because you get lost in your head trying to figure out stuff. It's like, oh, it rattles around for a while and it comes out your mouth because you've distilled it enough
mm-hmm.
to be able to articulate it. And then it's like, oh, well, I'm not sure I quite meant that because it doesn't sound quite right. Right. So how do you dig deeper into yourself with those kinds of activities, which I'm sure you have happened? I saw you. It's like, I know that, right?
Yeah, no, when I got time handed to me, that's where that upwising started inside of me. And what I found was that we complicate things. We really, really complicate things. You know, it's like things don't need to be so complicated. And so with my business, I literally, it disappeared overnight, just like with your friend. And I was like, what do I do? You know, if I sit down and think about all of this right now that just happened, I'm going to end up 6 feet under. And I can't afford to do that right now. So what am I going to do? I just said, take one step at a time. Mm-hmm. And I made it very simple then. I said, if it feels good, do more of it. If it doesn't feel good, and don't do more of it.
Absolutely. That's a heart-centered, you know, does it resonate? Does it not resonate?
Does it not resonate? But then also I made the conscious choice, and I know you get this, to surround myself with people who supported me, mm-hmm. who encouraged me, who valued me, right? So it became, I changed my friendships, my work relationships, the collaborations I was doing to really detox and surround myself. That was a huge thing. That was a major, major, I think, thing that helped me get through that hard time, was having that community of like-minded people. That's when Dennis Patoko and I connected. I connected with so many people in his movement, and I started aligning myself with people who had that similar sort of passion. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they start coming out of the woodworks. And I'm like, where have all these people been my whole life? Right? And so pretty soon it doesn't even feel like work anymore. Like talking to you right now, I'm just having a great conversation with somebody, you know? And was I doing this before the pandemic? No, I hadn't done a single one of these before the pandemic, right? So
the phrase, right, that we've all heard recently, slow down to move fast, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
The complexity doesn't have to be complicated.
That's right.
Everything's pretty simple when you begin from this holistic system, right, mm-hmm. the body, the gut, the heart, and the brain, right? The indigenous three brain system that I talk about a lot, because it just makes sense. And so much so, even scientifically now, being able to sense stuff in your gut, your intuition, we all know that that's existed for quite some time. Mm-hmm. We just question the validity of our own, usually, because we don't tend to trust ourselves.
Right.
And once we tune in at the gut level and check that, you know, the heart's where you... You know, does this feel good? Does it not feel yes. good? Is it desirable? It's like the Dallas place, right? Is it desirable or undesirable? And then, mm-hmm. then, and only then, we can go up here and go, okay, what am I going to do about this? Mm-hmm. Rather than having some reactionary, prescriptive thought program that we've been taught.
Yes.
We have a choice. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the article the other day of the scientist that he's been studying for 40 years and at Harvard level or something to that nature? And he says, there is no free will.
Yeah.
I'm like, excuse me. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a choice in every moment.
Yeah. And you and I are on the same page. Not only do we have a choice, right? But we have a radical responsibility.
Oh, absolutely. Once you make a choice, there are no others.
Yeah.
You've committed to something. That's You've right. got to do what I call it job archy. I'm doing partnering workshops with bridge construction. Job archy means the job's the boss. Mm-hmm. Everybody wins that way.
That's right. Yeah.
So how do you bring those people in the best to the best light to begin with? What are the kinds of things that concepts word phrases? A lot of times it's shifting just a word phrase from That's one right. to another to really make a huge shift.
That's right.
What are the kinds of things that you find work best?
Well, I mean, so with
or work period.
Yeah. I mean, so like with the work that I'm doing, right. For example, when I just look back on my journey, right. And I talk about this a lot, that when I look back at my legal career, when I go before that, when I look back at those kids that were making fun of me, you know, what I kept coming back to over and over again was that there was a lot of ignorance. There was a lack of awareness out there, mm-hmm. right? That everybody is a product of their own upbringing. And we're all influenced by our surroundings, our experiences, our families, our religions, and everything else, our lived experiences. And the other thing that kept coming back to me over and over again was that when we are interacting with people that are different than us, and we're all different from each other, right? that this lack of awareness was negatively impacting people's relationships, right? So I found it, and we all know that we all know that we have this bias that we're all hardwired with, affinity bias,
it's
right?
The internal dialogue that happens while you're interacting with another.
Exactly. And you have the affinity bias where if someone looks like you and they act like you, it's natural that we're going to gravitate towards that person. That's natural. That's normal. That's going to happen. But when
we're not aware of the reach around.
That's right. But that's what so then when I started seeing these themes coming up over and over again, knowing that we're all hardwired and we want to belong, that's what we all want to do, is we want to belong, whether it's at work, whether it's at with our family, whether it's in our school, whatever, we want to belong. Mm-hmm. And so I just started thinking about, okay, based on my legal education, based on having worked with organizations, where are some areas, because there's a lot that goes into that, you know, there's so much that goes into it. What are the areas that I want to focus in on? So unconscious bias is an area that I've chosen to focus on to help people understand where that sort of is coming from. And this science has come a long way, and I'm not an expert. Yeah, I'm not an expert in that, and I don't claim to be, but I know enough to help educate people, to help empower people so that they can understand how their own biases are impacting their own relationships. So they have an interest in wanting to learn this because it's negatively going to impact their own relationships, people that they love. So I said, this is a great area for me to focus in on, because we are all want to know how to improve our relationships with the people that we love and the people we care about and the people that we're interacting with. So that's one area. And then civility. You know, I saw so much incivility in my life and what I've experienced being on the receiving end of it, and then defending people who were accused of being uncivil, that I'm like, this is an area that I want to focus on because I've seen so much and I know what we should be doing to mitigate that, right? Or at least I have my perspectives on it. And so that's another area that I focus in on, right? But also bystander intervention. You know, that was another thing where I kept seeing over and over again, all this time, you know, I'm working on these law cases and I'm working with all these organizations, and like, everybody knows what's going on, but people aren't doing anything about it. And it was so frustrating to me to see that over and over again.
And do you sense, and I've even written about this recently, that there's an underlying anger that no one is really willing to address? Because of this, there's just a general unrest and anger about the way things are right now.
I don't know if it's anger, but it's distrust. That's what I would call it. There's this underlying, people are just not willing to trust. Could it be called anger? But it comes off that way.
Yeah, but, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. This, you know, how do we reconnect? How do we
disconnect? That's the right word, disconnection. That's what it is. There's an underlying disconnect.
Yeah.
And we need to help people reconnect. And we knew this was going to happen coming out of the pandemic. I mean, I don't even think we fully even understand the trauma.
The pandemic, it's been foretold for millennia that there would be this period. There's all kinds of calendars lining up. There's prophecies lining up.
Yep.
So nobody's left out.
Yes. You're right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Pay attention. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to look, if you're not willing to look and hide yourself in the sand, then you're falling that only those who fear shall fail category, right? Because you're going to burn up with your own anxiety all the stuff that's happening. So how do we get over that anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. Is that same feeling, that sensation in the gut that feels like being anxious, right? You're anticipating something, but you don't necessarily know what it is. You don't be scared shitless or, you know, jumping for joy, right? So how do you reframe that sensation into one that's just, okay, now you need to be a little more aware, right? Yep. Don't go any direction with it. Just notice.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that something that's easily educable?
I think you can do it. I think it's, whether it's easy, I don't know. I think we can do it more right now because we do have the internet. So the reach is bigger. Mm-hmm. We can do more. Like, for example, we just talk about LinkedIn. We've got our own little networks that we can impact, right? And so we can create that ripple effect now if we do this right, which we're all doing, right? Like if you look at
it takes
at my,
doing this, it takes these conversations.
Absolutely.
And the ripple is those who love it and share it, right?
Yes.
Sharing is sharing. And
That's
there's still, if we don't, then there's still too many silos.
That's right.
And we're just repeating the pyramidal hierarchies that are competing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Folks like, well, yourself, and you're familiar with Daniel Wall and mm-hmm. Nora Bateson and those folks, Otto Scharmer and his work, kind of a takeoff of early Peter Senge work, right?
Yeah.
All of these things are gearing us toward learning about ourselves more, self-mastery.
Yes.
And then creating learning organizations so that self-mastery can be shared.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Now, how do you see, or what do you think might be some ways of rolling this out? By this, I mean this next, I see it as kind of a next step, next layer of activity where the silos begin to disappear and people actually are starting to collaborate more. How do you see that happening? And do you see it? What part of the product curve do you see it in?
You know, I don't even think that big, Zen. I don't even see it that
you could,
in
but
that
it's
way.
Just for a
yeah.
moment.
I could, every the, what I do, you know, is that I'm committed to making ongoing efforts to create the positive workplace cultures and impacting it the way that I do. And how do I create a bigger impact, right? So for me, that means leveraging my social networks. For me, that means leveraging my social currency on my social media. For mm-hmm. me, that means working with organizations across the globe to talk about the topics that I'm passionate about. It means collaborating with people so that we can make a bigger impact together. It means doing more of these conversations where I can raise awareness on topics that I, you know, the lessons that I've learned so that we can empower more people to, like what you said, so they can go empower more people, you know. So I just look at like what I can contribute to that broader sort of cultural movement that I'm a part of, right, that I want to see more of. But I see that just by having this conversation right here, I've grown. Because now you've asked me a question, you've planted the seed in here, Zen, where like, I'm like, wait a second. Okay, I need to reflect on this a little bit more and think about it from that bigger perspective. So thank you.
I understand
helping
maybe
me
where Dudley Lynch
now.
came from. dear friend I've known on through his writings and things from turn of the century. He wrote a book called Mother of All Minds and mm-hmm. previously, he wrote one called The Strategy of the Dolphin. It was in the 1980s. It was an organizational development book. And he labeled me as a possibilities coagulator. Right? So it's nebulous enough.
It's a good one.
Specific,
yeah.
And because I ask a lot of questions. I ask him of me.
Yeah.
First of all, and it's like, okay, I kind of wrestle with it for a while. And then I begin to ask questions of others. And what's the harm in asking questions?
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes we get this almost a confrontational stance when we ask questions that have no answer yet.
You are in my head. Stop doing that. Seriously, because I'm going to get off of here and I'm going to press. You're going to give me 5 minutes to post my next LinkedIn post. I have it ready to go. You want to know what it's about? Asking questions are keys. It's all about asking questions, what you just said right there. So you are in my head and we're like on that same.
Jeez, and it's not in a trap.
I know. And you just helped me grow because now you've given me something to think about and ponder on, reflect on. So thank you for that.
You know, this is, and thank you. I'm so blessed and honored that these kinds of things, this is what I hope for, right? That's why I call these apocalyptic chats.
Mm-hmm.
We unveil stuff for each other. right? It's a shared reciprocal curious learning process of who we are and what we can do.
Yeah.
Right? And it is such, has such huge potential right now with things that are happening in the world, that there's apparently an increasing momentum and desire for it.
Yep.
So how do you bring your being a good human self into, and I say that because, you know, one of the things that I'm doing is a director of operations for a global peace movement and foundation called Live and Let Live.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this in the past, and, you know, we've got two principles: be an excellent human. And so we unpack what that means, and we can go from behavior to consciousness and everywhere in between. And the second principle is a legal one: don't aggress. Long term, we want to remove aggression from the law across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a huge task that most people go, that'll never happen.
Yeah, sure.
Well, how can we prove them wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Right, because this is just one area of many that totally. We have to address in order for the sweeping change to occur.
That's right. And in order for it to occur in the way that you describe and in the way that I want to see in the work that I'm doing, is that we're going to have to develop a lot of resilience and perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to do that. Because
well,
it's
we've
not
made it this far. I think we've done fairly well.
Yeah, but no, but we've still got a lot more to do, you know.
Oh,
but
absolutely. And yet the tools that you have and I have and others like us have kind of set us up in a foundational place
absolutely.
Where we're resources.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
How do you see that resource sharing developing? What networks are you aware of that you find compatible and complementary to this work?
I mean, I think it's really important to have good, solid mentors that are going to be able to amplify your voice, right? So for me, I surround myself with mentors, with people that have access to more resources so that I can try to find ways to not only amplify my own voice but other people who are doing that. So I try to be an ally for other people's voices to get heard, just like how you're doing here. I'm always sort of introducing people within my network to each other, right? And so mm-hmm. hoping that has a butterfly effect and goes out, right, into that way. But really, it's about our messaging. It's about the words that we use, right? So I think about when I post
casting, right?
Yeah, when I post on LinkedIn, I put a lot of thought into, and I've seen a change in my own posts. I went back and looked at some of the stuff that I was posting, you know, before the pandemic. There was, you know, and now, it's a completely different tone. Completely, my words have changed and my tone has definitely changed.
Right. Isn't it funny how we go through those things and it happens so gradually often that we don't realize it until we turn back and look and it's like, wow, I said that?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So does that result in a pat on the back or a gentle, oh, boy, I'm glad that happened, right? Or,
yeah.
You know, because we got to be careful in this process that we don't, it's fine to self-aggrandize, and we need to, right? Because if we don't talk about ourselves, nobody else will. And that's the first step of sharing ourselves, and do it in the confident, not arrogance.
Right.
And then there's the other side of that, which is the, for lack of a better, the humble side.
Yeah.
Right. The, what was the word that Ali Anani used earlier? Another one of our BizCat associates.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about balanced pride.
Mm.
So those kinds of things, how do we balance that? How, you know, where's the line? How can we tell with ourselves what are the indicators inside of us, and what kind of reflection might you get from others to indicate that, oh, I'm crossed the line there.
I mean, I'm listening to my intuition more now than I ever have. And I've got solid intuition. I've always had it, but I've also have this other side of me, you know, that I see potential in everybody. And so I would, for example, if I met somebody and I would have a red flag about that person, I would overlook my intuition because I saw that possibility in that person and maybe choose to work with them, right? Whereas now I'm trusting my instincts way more and I'm listening to that inner voice way more, right? Because I'm confident.
You brought it back full circle from where we started.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like, and I'm not necessarily religion specific, but one of the phrases that applies is be ye as little children, right? Mm-hmm. That's we. And it's not that we're childlike or a childish, that we're childlike.
Yeah.
And our curiousness and our ability to ask questions.
Yeah.
Such a wonderful conversation so far. What might you offer that would assist others who may be just starting in their own inquiry, right? Because you and I have gone through some things, and we know that there are many more that are in process now, population wise, percentage wise, than there were even 2 years ago. There's been a huge boon in the queries that others are making. How do you see that expanding? And what kind of inspired response or advice might you give others?
I'm gonna just leave this out there. Okay. I think I want everyone, if I can say something to everybody, and this is what they're gonna learn from me from listening to this conversation, because I think we talked about so many things. I know I learned so much, right, from you. But if there's one thing I would just want to share is that follow the platinum rule. You know, we've been taught to treat other people in the way that you want to be treated. And I want to just change that paradigm because I think that'll address so much of everything that we've talked about is if we start treating people, not as how we want to be treated, but because of how they want to be treated, then that encompasses every single thing that you and I have talked about. Simple. Let's keep it simple. Just teach people what the platinum rule is, and then let's amplify that, and let's make that be the way.
It's almost a cosmic dust rule, right? It's everywhere, and when applied, it works wonders. Because, as you say, you know, there's so much trauma in the world, and people that are used to being mistreated that's the way they expect to be treated.
That's right.
And so they treat others that way.
That's right.
So I think that was the point that you were making, if I read it correctly or heard it correctly. Little synesthesia going on there.
Or right? and to add to that also, yeah. but that in order for you to treat somebody in the way they want to be treated, what do you have to do? You have to ask questions. You have to get curious. You have to understand them. You have to get to know them. You have to connect with them. So once you get to that point, a lot of the stuff we're seeing now just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you know that person. You've made time to be present with that person, which is what is it that we all want?
To love and be loved.
That's right. Follow the platinum rule, people.
Oh, so how do you see, I don't want to let you go yet because this is so interesting and we could go so many different directions. We haven't even broached the subject of consciousness, although we've talked about its effect, right? How do you see this evolutionary path that humanity is on playing out in the near future from all the things that you know, the history that you have, the ability that you have to foresee, maybe even be a little intuitive about it. How do you see this unfoldment taking place in the near future? Are we still up for some really tumultuous times, or greater tumultuous times than we have right now? Or do you think we're tapped out?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. It depends on the day.
Yeah.
My answer to that question is going to depend on when you're asking me that question. I mean, right now, I'm feeling optimistic, even though there's so much crazy shit going on in the world.
Oh, yeah.
I'm feeling optimistic, you know, but a week ago, you know, when somebody really close to me got diagnosed with cancer, I was feeling, you know, really like, God, you know, what is going on? Why are people fighting and killing each other over these things when there's so much we can't even control?
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah.
Here's another, this is, and I'm just, you know, because I sat and conceptualized on numerous occasions about, you know, stuff, as you can tell. And in this human shift of consciousness and learning how to come together as a global society and civilization, right? Sure. Planetary citizens, if you will. Do you see our ability to come together being able to then address the worst of our humanity, being stopping of the wars, taking care of the areas that are struck with famine, addressing the poor economic and socioeconomic situations where people just aren't being taken care of, right? Because ultimately, if we're going to be good humans or excellent humans, we can't claim to be so unless everybody's taken care of.
That's right. That's true. Right?
Is that so? That making sense, at least to some degree, how might we be able to move the needle or plant the seeds? Mike, you got three of them in your profile, right? For your path fixing.
Well,
how do we plant seeds to nurture that?
I think it starts with basically realizing or helping everybody realize that we all need to collectively make that shift from scarcity mindset into abundance mindset. And we need to all do that collectively together.
Mm-hmm.
That starts with that. If we can't get people to make that mindset shift, we're not going to be able to get there.
And it's tough to do that when you have the faith, love, and trust in it, and yet the evidence hasn't shown up.
That's right. So we just have to be those, we have to continue to do that as much as we can in our smaller communities and networks and let that ripple effect happen. But that's what needs to happen, you know, is there's so much pain, there's so much trauma, there's so much hate that it's easy to slip back into the scarcity mindset, especially when everything is built around that mindset.
When you're hungry.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
So those are some of the things that collectively we have just seeded, because we are two or more who have gathered in agreement, mm-hmm. and so shall it be, right?
Yeah.
We'll put that system to the test.
That's right.
Why not? Right? If we can play like this, these kinds of, you know, anything is possible to those who believe. Well,
that's right.
When we act on those beliefs, then these things begin to happen.
That's right.
Gosh.
What? This is the perfect way to end this conversation with a discussion on law of attraction.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's what we're doing, right? That's all we can do that if with the intention.
I sum it up into three words.
Yeah.
Attention, intention, mm-hmm. and interactions.
Mm.
Where your focus is
yes.
is the playing field you're going to be on, and the players you're going to have in life.
Thank you for this incredible conversation today, Zen. I knew it was going to be good, but this took it to a whole nother level. So thank you.
Hey, you know, I'm open to be invited elsewhere too. And thank you, Sejal. This has just been wonderful. And I'm glad I was able to sprinkle in some practicalities with Nobody Studios and the work that you're doing, and as well as the discussion about how to be a better person.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
And thank you. And namaste and in la catch. And thank you for sticking with us for this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and I will see you next time.